Previously on the Adventure Zone.
There are notes about the beast folk. According to the notes, just like used to be animals over on Earth, and then as they sort of spent time in Sylvain, in this alien world, quickly transformed into these new forms.
Sylvain has become all. Those living on her surface would seek to shatter her body entirely in pursuit of their own survival.
My name is Woodbridge, Minister of Preservation. I ensure the survival of our kind in the wake of your world's countless ruthless assaults.
And the interpreter turns back to face you and gives you a little bow, and she says,
Yes, everything's okay. I just...
God, she can't even pay attention for a moment, even in the presence of royalty.
Your finger touches the cold, smooth stone as Minerva's blade cuts through the air.
For 3/4 of 1 second, a veil is lifted. Minerva, the Scion, far from home, swings her blade through the air, and 6 gateways to another world are torn throughout the fabric of Kepler, West Virginia. The citizens manning the outposts around town prepare themselves for whatever lies beyond these rifts. But for 3/4 of 1 second, Minerva finds herself uncharacteristically unprepared for what she sees through her portal. It is not Sylvain. What Minerva sees, and the rest of Kepler sees, albeit with slower minds, is light. And through the light, shapes, lights at different depths. A chamber, antiseptic and cold, illuminated from below by a pulsating, living dome of brilliant light. Illuminated from above by a helix of beams of light, stretching endlessly up a cylindrical chamber. It is a world, it is a room, that Minerva has seen before. Just 2 short months ago, standing on top of the Green Bank telescope with her squire. And now, like then, pieces of a puzzle that she's been solving her entire life begin sliding slowly closer together. Literally and figuratively, the heroes of Kepler see the light. And through that portal, for 3/4 of 1 second, they are seen in return. Minerva's Zweihänder reaches the end of its arc and strikes the rocky ground below her feet. Like a television changing channels, the portal's destination shifts. And then, the town is overtaken by storm and fury.
Thacker, your ears adjust as if they've just popped due to a very sudden pressure change in this central chamber of the FBI compound. At least that's where you think you still are. You are surrounded by dark gray fog, which has seemingly consumed this room entirely. Your vision is restricted to just like a foot in front of your face, and you hear the sound of fighting and of yelling in the distance, and it's almost just completely muffled, and you see no one. You can barely see your own hands. What do you do?
I think he would call out and try to find the others.
What do you call out?
Hey, guys, gals, peoples, hello? Anybody there? It's me, Thacker.
Thacker.
You hear your own voice muffled as if you're like trying to yell while you are underwater. And it's as you have that sensation of hearing your own voice being sort of drowned out by this cloud that you're standing in, that you remember that this is not
the first time that this has happened to you before. And you start to feel yourself, for whatever reason, getting very angry, getting very, very upset. What do you do?
I think he's going to give in to it. I don't think he's... I think it's the quill, because it did happen before, the fog.
Yeah.
And he passed out. But then he started having all these visions and all those memories and all those emotions. And I think he might have fought it the first time. I think he's going to open himself up to it. Now that he kind of has a little bit more of a handle on his psychic stuff.
You're going to try to ride the wave instead of swimming against it.
Yeah, this is extremely good. You're going to ride the wave. We'll see what comes of it. You feel how you felt just a few hours before when you were sitting by the river and you were trying to establish that psychic link to find out where this thing is. But now it's like, now it is more desperate. Now it's like, now it's here and you are here, and it's not just this intangible mental scanners thing. Like, it's in your lungs, and you're trying to make the most of it. Why don't you, I would say this is act under pressure, but it almost feels like a weird, like it has to be a weird role of some sort, right? This is you trying to use your psychic stuff, which is like explicitly weird. So I think maybe it's like use magic or some, amalgamation of that. Or maybe it's one of your abilities. I don't know what all the seeker has.
Well, there's one thing the searcher has called the things I've seen.
Okay.
When you encounter a creature or phenomenon, you may declare that you have seen it before.
Yeah.
The keeper may ask you some questions about that encounter and will then tell you one useful fact you learned and one danger you need to watch out for, maybe right now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you've definitely had this happen to you before. A thing you remember, a fact that you will find useful. I think the thing that you will find useful is that you are susceptible to this stuff and you don't know if everybody else is, but this fog, this cloud is what makes people go berserk. But that's not all that is in it. There are these visions that you saw just a few hours ago, these blood red entities that seem to be hiding in the fog and are probably going to be the first troops that come over during the invasion. And that is also the danger. And I think thanks to that, you are able to see through this fog more clearly, and you can see you see one of these shapes. And it is walking towards a couple silhouettes. You can't make out who they are, but you see this blood red shape, almost like centipede-like, but like the size of a Saint Bernard, moving towards two of the folks who were just in this room with you before Aubrey touched the archway. Do you still want to try and tap into the power, or is that the extent of like your psychic event here?
I need to do something to help them. I need to warn them. I think Thacker would take off in a run.
Okay.
As fast as his old legs can carry him in the direction of the two silhouettes, waving his arms and yelling at the top of his lungs, "Centipede! Centipede!"
It's a great battle cry.
Centipede!
Duck and Aubrey.
Uh-huh.
You both are in this fog, and you are close enough to each other. Duck was probably flanking you fairly close when you went up to touch the archway, and so when this cloud arrived, you all were in arm's reach to each other, and like I said earlier, it is so dense, this cloud, that you can barely see anything beyond just a foot, but you can see the silhouette of the other person. You can see Duck's hat. And you know that he is there, but you cannot see too much else. You hear yelling, and it is so loud and so purposeful, and it is coming to your right, and it is seemingly a drowned out voice yelling, "Centipede!"
Centipede!
I'm going to read a bad situation then.
Okay.
Seems bad.
Seems accurate. I don't know that it's ever seemed more accurate than it does right now.
Why don't you...
And that's plus what? Plus show?
Yes.
So that brings me up to 8?
Okay, that is a mixed success. For a mixed success on Read a Bad Situation, you get to ask one question from the list. And we're in the finale now. I don't think we have to read the list every time.
Man, it sure would be helpful, though, because I never remember what it is.
What's the best way in? What's the best way out? Are there dangers we haven't noticed? What's the biggest threat? What's most vulnerable to me? What's the best way to protect the victims?
I'm going to go with, what's the biggest threat?
That's a tricky question. The biggest threat
I didn't write it. You just read it out loud to me.
That's fair. The biggest threat is this cloud. The biggest threat is this cloud because it is... you feel it trying to take hold of you, but mm-hmm. you find for whatever reason your willpower is not even, weak enough to be tested like that. And like this
you mean
is the
Aubrey
thing
specific, like
Aubrey specifically, like you feel like this thing has you have no power over me, weird cloud full of centipedes. And it is the transit system through which, like, the other horrors and nightmares that the Quell is capable of producing, it is how they travel. It is how they get to where they are going to go.
I want you to know, I actually read A Bad Situation with Ulterior Motive to open up my third eye.
Okay, you open up your third eye. What's that mean again?
I take in extra information, take plus one hold on any result of 7 or more, plus you can see invisible things.
You can see invisible things. Okay. You see this centipede. You can see it through the cloud. Aubrey, you just got like cloud vision. Like you can see, you don't even see this cloud anymore. You just see the archway and you see Duck nearby kind of squinting his eyes and you see Thacker charging at you yelling centipede. You see behind some crates near the door into this room, you see Barclay and Mama and Agent Stern, and you know they're trying to look around for what's happening too. And you see this centipede right in front of you.
Can I tell that Aubrey is locked on? I mean,
Yeah, let's get Duck in the into the action.
I think Aubrey says, like, Duck, look out, giant centipede, 2:00.
This is seconds after you just touched the archway. And you're not exactly sure if the plan has gone off without a hitch, but this is not like, you know, joining you in media res. This is you touch the archway and then boom, here we are.
A bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Can I make out where the thing is? Like, can I?
Yeah, I would say with Aubrey's help, and it is so close to you now, and maybe you just would have seen like a shadow and not known what to do with it, but Aubrey has like clearly outlined for you where it is and what it is and what its, you know, what its intentions are. So yeah, you can see it.
Its intention is to date my daughter.
So I remove beacon and try to strike at where the center of the thing probably is.
Thorax, I believe. Or is that the abdomen?
Thank you, yes.
Roll to kick some ass.
Some thorax.
Roll to kick some thorax. Ooh,
hey,
that's a good 10.
10.
Plus
2. 12.
You don't have that advanced move, did you?
We never did those, really.
I mean, you take them on level up. It's one of the things you can take on level up. By the way, you guys missed a lot of rolls last episode, and I have not been tracking your EXP for you, and we are not going to have another chance to level up. So just like, if you got one, holler, and we'll have to do it sort of midstream here.
I'm about halfway to one.
Okay. You may need to go back and do an inventory between episodes.
Why do that when the beloved listening public will do it for me? Did your hero, Duck Newton, level up? Please
text us now at 1999.
Tweet at me, but first see if other people already did, because you don't want to be a jag about it.
Okay, what is it? As you like approach this thing with beacon drawn, you can see its shape completely. How do you strike it? And then we'll choose your extra effect.
I just say, I don't know, fuck it. And then I swing it right down to where I think the middle probably is. Best of luck, partner. I don't know, bud. Just do your best in there, all right?
Okay, what is your extra effect? You gain the advantage, take plus one forward, or give plus one forward to another hunter. You inflict terrible harm, you suffer less harm, you force them where you want them.
I'm going to do plus one forward to Aubrey. I feel like a little extra oomph. I feel like we're going to need a little extra sauce to put this thing down.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. All right. You bury Beacon into this thing's midsection, and you hear it scream. And as it screams, like, Thacker, you feel like somebody just kicked you in the head. It is a voice that you know, and it's a voice that, you know, for a time, like, came out of you. And just hearing that, having that, like, disassociation, like just it gives you a searing headache just for a second. You see this thing writhe in pain on the floor, and where you cut it, you start to see it like fold backward on itself, and new sort of the new legs start appearing from the wound. Ew. Trying to stand up. You duck as it makes these new legs. One of them is just like whipping around wildly, and it catches you across the face, and you take 2 harm.
Okay,
but you don't. You have a very strong
face, so powerful and cool.
Glances off your iron like face.
Old iron face. Damn it! It still hurt. God damn it!
Okay, Aubrey, you have plus one forward. Thacker, though, you were kind of next in the order. Do you want to try and do something else?
I'm going to try to pin it to the ground with the spike in the walking staff.
Okay, you wipe off some of the dude blood from it as you draw your walking staff. You're just going to sort of, you know, dragoon this thing, or what's up?
Yeah, just kind of swing it over my head two-handedly and just whomp it right into the ground to hopefully pin it in place.
Okay. Why don't you roll to kick some ass?
That would be a 9.
Plus tough?
0.
Oh, really? Duck, can you do anything to help him out?
Yeah, I could, with my attack, I could, you know, try to, I could say I stunned it a little bit, you know, not made it a little easier to hit.
Yeah, I already have plus one forward from the third eye.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So maybe take that move, you know, put it where you want it.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't realize he was next in the order. I would have directed it at him. So that's, can I just fine. Say I did that?
Yeah, sure. You give plus one forward to, we'll retcon that. You give plus one forward to Thacker, which brings it up to a 10. On a 10 plus, I'm guessing you force them where you want them, right? If you want to pin them to the ground?
Yeah, I would think so. Down being the direction I want them to go.
Okay, same thing. This thing, you jab hard into the ground. And again, like, you're standing on the grass surrounding the archway, so it is not difficult for you to get... it's tough for you to get through this thing's chitin or whatever it has. And it's not hard for you to, like, pierce into the loam below. And sure enough, you get this thing stuck into the ground. And then, like, a half second after you pierce through this thing, these tendrils whip up out of its back where you stab through, and just start like wrapping and tangling around your arms. And as you pull away, you feel this like horrible stinging sensation, and you take 2 harm. Except you really do.
Okay, but did it succeed in pinning it to the ground?
Oh, yes, for sure. Aubrey, okay. What do you do next?
I'm going to blast it with fire. I'm going to kill it with fire, I think.
Okay, what does this look like?
Aubrey, 2-hand, you know, like full-on blaster style, is just like, gonna shoot some fire
just
at it.
Just Iron Manning it?
Exactly.
All right, roll and use magic.
Well, that's a 6, and then I have -1, right, because I'm using magic, makes it a 5, plus...
No. No. It's just +2 is your magic.
I was doing my math differently. But basically, that brings it to an 8, or to 7. But yes, 8, and then +1 forward, a 9.
And I will say that everything that that your buddy Thacker just did, pinning this thing, this immobile centipede to the ground, I think that handily brings it up to a 10.
By the way, I'm guessing this is an oversized centipede, right? We're not like all trying to hack up this.
No, that's the weird thing.
Worm.
It's like 1 inch. It's so weird that we're freaking out.
It's a little guy. No, it is St. Bernard sized. Okay, yeah, you have no problem just nuking this thing. And as you do, it just turns into this bright red, just sort of gelatinous, not like, it's not like It's not like blood. It is way too bright and like gooey for that. Mm-hmm. You see it just like splatter across the floor, inert. And when it falls, the storm in like a pretty good radius around it, so like most of this room, just kind of gets pushed away, just gets kind of repulsed away from where this thing fell. And when it does, it sort of reveals Agent Stern with the rifle out. And he like, you know, reacts with panic as suddenly you appear and there's this red like splotch on the ground, and he says, did you all took care of it then? You all, yeah, that was,
it's dead.
You
all, it's dead. Put okay. The gun down, Stern, gun down, please.
He lowers it.
Thank you.
And just past them, you see Janelle, who is similarly like trying to get her bearings as you all appear. And Mama stands up and walks towards you and says, was that it?
Yeah, Quail's dead. We did it.
I don't think that was the Quail.
Damn.
That was Lil Quail.
I loved his latest album.
You see that red fluid now start scooting across the floor, just sort of, you know, rolling over itself, trying to make its way back into the archway. Right. And Mama looks down at it and says, yeah, I don't think you actually did it. I don't think it's done.
But I burned it with fire. I put a box on top of it.
Make it go into a jar.
Yeah, you can do that. There's a crate. We've established there are crates in this room.
I
you
put
grab
a crate
one of the
on
crates.
Top of it.
Yeah, you grab one of the crates not filled with plastic explosives, and you just put it on top. And now the crate, comically, like, is trying to scoot closer to the archway. And
I sit Barclay, on top of the crate.
Yeah, Barclay sits on it. He's like, you have places to go. I'll do the crate sitting. I'll fall on this grenade, everybody. I know, it's heroic.
We could just put a second crate on top of it, Barclay. Like, you don't have to.
No. This is my sacrifice to make. Don't you take this moment from me.
But there's like 100 crates in here.
It's beautiful. Our own fucking Palm and Purim right here. Touching.
How dare you? How dare you conjure that image? You know. That's our second Final Fantasy.
The Final Fantasy tragedy reference in the finale arc, yes. Mama says, okay, well, I mean, we don't want to risk it. More stuff might be headed this way. And, you know, we gotta have just another point of control here. So I guess me and Agent Stern and a very relaxed Barclay are going to take this point. Are y'all going to be okay on the other side?
Well, I mean, we have no way of knowing that. I hope so.
Oh, yeah. It's right up here. Tap an old noggin for you, for those of you listening on something else. It's all up here in the old noodle. I can get us there, yep, in one piece. Don't you worry about it, sport.
Yeah, we'll just all go with this guy we've known for 3 days. It's going to be great.
Mama says, it's all right. He's with me.
Okay.
And Agent Stern like walks over to the corner of the room and comes back over to the three of you. And I think to Aubrey, because, you know, you are the person that he knows the most. You all lived together essentially for a year. He holds out this black case and it's open. And inside you see that same kind of orange brick that he warned you all about earlier, the explosive Simtex. And it seems to be rigged up with some kind of like handheld remote. And he closes it and hands it to you, Aubrey. And he says, just in case. Now, just in case, if you bring this back and you don't use it, I am going to have to take it back. Oh, but just in case you need...
I feel weird holding it. This is terrifying. This is terrifying.
I mean, someone else can hold it if you need to.
I mean, I'm pretty tough. I can hold it if you need me
hey,
to.
Hey, listen, Stern.
She's highly flammable.
Yes, I appreciate, but one of the three of us is known to spontaneously catch fire. So
yeah, it's not great.
I'm going to hand it to the adult, Duck, and let him hold it. Thank you, though. Hey, thank you. This is going to prove very helpful, I bet.
He says, yeah, you know, just in case. Oh, it is a case.
We have a good 30-minute long laugh.
You hear a like screaming.
The world ends.
Yeah. You hear a screaming like roar. Several of them actually in the distance through the thick canvas of this facility, coming from far off in Kepler as other outposts sort of wage war against whatever's coming through. And Janelle says, we really should go, don't you think? It seems like maybe your friends are in danger.
Hold the line, Mama. We'll be back in one piece, probably.
Well, hopefully three pieces. Well, that would be rough.
I meant individual. Okay, let me go through the gate.
The twice-locked door of the Kepler Sheriff's Station rattles and cracks against the weight of the bright red horde outside. Sheriff Zeke Owens, alongside Detective Megan and Deputy Dewey, catch glimpses of the terrors through cracks in the boarded-up windows. They number too many to reliably count, let alone take on in open combat. Everyone in the Sheriff's Station knows this. Nevertheless, their resolve does not falter. Detective Megan fills the chambers of two service revolvers, counting her ammo with care. Sheriff Zeke retrieves every box of shotgun shells from the station's safe and orders them in a neat pile. He pulls the ring of keys from his belt and slides open a cell door. He enters and kneels down beside its occupant.
I'm sorry I haven't tried to be more here for you. I've been trying to just, you know, give you some space. I was there. I know it was an accident, but I just assume that's probably not enough for you to let yourself off the hook. Am I right, Pigeon?
Pigeon is sitting on the floor, wrapped in a thick wool blanket. She nods.
I can't pretend to know what that feels like, Pigeon. That guilt is gonna ride you like a dog for the rest of your life, and I can't imagine the weight of that. But I do know loss, and I know what it can do to you. Make you feel like your life's not worth nothing, that all the joy and pleasure in the world has been locked away, not just not an option for someone like you anymore. I know that feeling, Pigeon, I swear.
Pigeon looks up from the floor, teary-eyed. Detective Megan enters her cell and hands her a cup of coffee.
Now, normally you'd need to take yourself a bunch of time before you can get yourself back up on your feet again. I get that, but we don't really got that kind of time. So,
he leans down close. One day, believe it or not, you're going to laugh at a joke. You're going to go swimming, and you're going to smile in the sunlight. You're going to pet yourself a good dog, and it's going to make you feel happy. You ain't always going to feel like this, Pigeon. Other people, maybe, but not you. And how do you get there? How do you get to that point? I don't know. But you are going to get there. And we're going to keep you safe, okay? Sheriff Zeke cocks his shotgun and nods at Detective Megan, who says,
"Hit it, Dewey."
Dewey smiles and hovers to the front door, manifesting with all of his power. He undoes the locks and throws the door open.
After y'all!
Crimson beasts and clawed horrors clash through the open door, flooding into the station, charging the three humans at the rear of the room. Zeke leaps forward, grabs the bars of the jail cell door, and slams it shut, trapping himself, Megan, and Pigeon inside, and the beasts outside. They press against the bars, trying and failing to reach their prey. Pigeon climbs to her feet. Zeke aims his shotgun. Megan cocks her revolvers and shouts,
"Welcome to Chicago, dipshits!"
You, Thacker, and Aubrey and Duck, with Janelle in tow, emerge through the archway and into the pavilion where this arch is kept under watch by the city guard only. Nobody's here. And as you look around the town below you, you realize that nobody is here in Sylvain at all. And the town hasn't been destroyed. The homes and the businesses and the temples and the restaurants, like, they're all still standing in relatively decent condition. The like crystalline lamp posts that line the main drag are still illuminated. And the only sign that something is off is the absence of, you know, all of the Sylvans and the knee-high layer of that dark cloud that is just everywhere. It is all over the town within the wall's borders, and it is just sort of like slowly shifting across the ground. And Janelle points in the distance and says, "We are going to have to find a way over to the castle, and I don't know about getting back into that fog again. Anyone have any ideas?"
"The main road is what gets us here. That's the direction we have to go in. So are you suggesting we fly or what?
Can we
fly? I don't
know
anybody's..."
"I don't know if we can... I do not know if we can fly, friend."
"It's pretty much a straight shot to the castle."
"Aubrey, you got any wind powers?"
Yeah, sure. Aubrey, like, claps her hands in front of her, trying to make a big blast of wind to blow away the fog. See if that works.
I cannot see any reason why you would need to roll for this. You can do magic. This is not a particularly difficult thing. What's it look
she,
like? How
she
big?
She definitely closes her eyes first. She, you know, this is the first time back in Sylvain since she touched the stone. She closes her eyes. She says, "Hi, magic. It's me again. It's Aubrey. We're trying to get past the fog, so we can stop the quell, which I assume you want to happen too. So if you could help me, I'm gonna blow away the fog." And then she like puts her hands out to her side and like makes a big clap in front of her.
As your hands collide, you hear somebody respond to what you just said. You hear someone say, "Please, please, 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 I know I failed them. I know I'm a fraud. Please, if that's you, if you're there anywhere, please, please help me."
Hello? Do I recognize the voice?
Yeah, you recognize the voice because you've heard it before. You've heard it in your head before. It is Alexandra. It is the interpreter who you have met several times now. You've had some, you know, weird connections with. You've heard her voice in the past. You've experienced one of her memories in the past. You hear her. You do not see her anywhere. But as you cast this spell and dispel this wind all around you, you hear her desperate plea.
"Alexandra, can you hear me?"
There is no response to that, and honestly, it's probably kind of tough to think about maintaining a conversation because of what happens when you cast this spell.
Oh.
The wind displaces the fog in front of you and pushes it away effortlessly, and like, you know, Moses parting the Red Sea, you descend the stairs and watch as, you know, for 50 feet in front of you, the fog parts, revealing the road beneath. And it also reveals something else. It reveals, first you see like an arm coming out of the fog, and then you see like a pair of legs coming out of the fog, and then you see just like, you realize there are bodies, and they're not laying on the ground. They appear to be just sort of floating in the fog.
And hate to see that.
You recognize that some of them are like furry, and some of them are not. Some of them are just like sylvan bodies that are sort of starting to emerge and falling to the ground where the storm parts. And they start to move, and you start to see Sylvans and beast folk alike beginning to move. You see shadows in the cloud starting to move towards you and move towards where you've sort of parted the storm here.
Now, Griffin, this may be a silly question, but move in a normal, cool way?
No.
Ah.
Move in a animalistic, extremely like lethargic, like injured, but sort of unnatural way, certainly.
Yeah, that's what I, you know what, I could have assumed that, but I okay. Yeah.
Are they between us and the road?
You have this like area of the road, this like split in the cloud that Aubrey has opened up where they are not. They seem to be like pushed into the cloud, but they are starting to close that gap right in front of
you. It's time to run, folks.
Let's fucking go.
And Aubrey takes off.
I think act under pressure. Everybody act under pressure +1 for what Aubrey just did, but this, you know, making your way through this obstacle course of arms and legs that are trying to approach you and grab onto you, I think is it, I want to see who is dexterously moving through this.
I rolled a 7 plus 0 cool plus 1, so an 8.
I rolled an 11 plus 2, 13. Hell yeah.
Thacker rolled a 10, but he has a trait called Just Another Day. When you have to act under pressure due to a monster, phenomenon, or mystical effect, you may roll plus weird instead of plus cool. He has 2 plus weird. That takes it up to a 12. Adding the 1 takes it up to 13.
I mean, you won with the 10. You just wanted to brag about how good and high your number was.
I know.
He gets 2 so very rarely. Griffin, let him have this.
Yeah.
Duck and Thacker, you all take off. Like, you all are you know, effortlessly leaping over these arms that are swinging out trying to grab you. And you just cruise right on down Main Street towards the castle and the you know, the garden with the crystal in front of it. And yeah, you just have no problem doing that.
Aubrey, are you rolling for Janelle?
I never roll. Aubrey, you are similarly, like, pretty easily making your way through. And Janelle is, like, holding on to your hand. You realize that she is actually having a little bit of trouble moving as quickly as you're able to. And so you're trying to pull her along, and you see her get grabbed by a couple of the hands, and a couple more, like, grab onto her robes and try to start pulling her under the storm. That is the mixed success, is that you are, you know, no issue moving through, but Janelle appears to have been grabbed.
I'm going to roll to kick some hands.
Okay.
So that's a 9.
Yep.
But my tough is minus 1, so it's an 8.
Oh, so you are not using magic. You were just using...
I'm kicking, like, the hands that are grabbing her.
Okay. Describe what this looks like.
So still holding her hands, keeping on her feet. Aubrey's just hauling back with her, you know, with her strong right foot, and just kicking the hand, you know, kicking the hand that's grabbing the robe, as they say.
I would say with a 13, Thacker can certainly pay a point forward because he went over 12.
Is that how that works?
That's not how it works at all. Okay. Aubrey, you all look back and see Aubrey just start skanking it in the middle of this crowd. And you hear crunching and pummeling below your feet, Aubrey. But one of these hands, like, grabs onto you, mm-hmm. and you feel like this sick, like, right at your calf, and you feel this, like, sickening kind of feeling just starting to course through you a little bit before you kick that shit away too. You take 1 harm, ignore armor.
Okay.
And you, with that, though, you manage to free Janelle, and the two of you catch up with Duck and Thacker, and you manage to clear this barricade that somebody had built up in front of this garden here, and you manage to make your way out of the storm and into the Crystal Garden, just below the steps of the palace.
What do we see?
And did we leave a slipper on the steps of the palace?
You unfortunately did not. You see a few things. As you actually, like, approach the palace, as you're, like, you know, running down the main drag, you see... down some alleyways, and then once you, like, get clear of the city towards the palace, you see, like, parks in the distance and hillsides in the distance in different parts of the town. You see Minerva's rifts open all over the Sylvain city here, and they are, like, too narrow for you to see what is going on the other side, but you see, like, frantic activity around each one as the Quell sort of pushes its invasion through those different points. But as you make your way past the barricade and into the garden here, you see the crystal, and it is barely illuminated now. It is this, like, faint, dark, fading orange. And up the stairs in front of you, you see the castle. It's got these huge, massive doors that are shut tight. And you can see some armor with some figures in the armor laying on the ground in front of those doors with their, you know, their jagged spears and pieces of armament scattered around the entryway. That is what you see.
Should I read a bad situation?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's all bad situations from here to the finish line. It's a 7 plus 2 or 9.
Anybody want to help out?
Yeah, so then I guess I will also, would I also roll?
You'd roll to help out and describe, like, what you're doing to help him read a bad situation. How are you
I hold my hands up in front of his eyes like two binoculars. I'm like, does that help?
What are you doing to look around the scene for dangers?
I'm going to attempt to open that their third eye. So obviously, like, closing her two eyes, the normal two eyes, you know, the ones.
Okay.
Okay.
You're shooting sonar out, essentially. Roll to help out.
I rolled an 8.
Okay, your help grants them +1 to their roll.
7 plus 1, 8, yes.
Right. You grant them +1 to their roll, but you expose yourself to trouble or danger.
I mean, that happens. You know, anytime you open your third eye, you're opening yourself to some psychic danger.
Sure, that bumps you up to a 10. Duck, what are your three questions that you get to ask?
What's my best way in?
You see... just to the right of those massive double doors, there is a stone circle built into the wall. And in the center of that stone circle is like a vertical slit. And it looks like a sort of medieval, padlock situation. You figure that is probably the mechanism to open the gate. And I think that actually Janelle is up there investigating it also and like sort of checking her robes. And she turns to you and she says that I don't have my key. I didn't think that I would be gone this long and that they would shut anyone out. The only ones with a key are the head of the palace guard and maybe the interpreter. That is what you get from that question.
Are there any dangers we haven't noticed?
There are.
Cool.
End of question.
I mean, that's asked and answered.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a danger that you have not noticed. You see some of that armor that is laying in front of the doorway into the palace. You see it start to move, and it is the biggest form that was laying on the ground here. And you see it start to shamble and pick itself up to its feet. That's a danger you didn't notice.
Okay.
Now, if I were to say what's the biggest threat to me, is that going to be the reanimated armor?
Yeah.
I'm just going to burn that one.
Okay.
I want to take advantage of that. The fact that I'm noticing it kind of like already reforming. Is there
there's someone inside of it.
Oh, there's somebody inside. It's like getting back up, right?
Yes. And it starts to trudge towards Janelle as she's investigating the lock.
I'm going to whip Beacon around its leg to try to knock it off balance while it's sort of getting its bearings.
Okay, I think it is not in a position to attack you right now. It has one of these. Its spear is even bigger than the other ones that are laying around, and it's got this like jagged edge to it. It's almost more like a pike or something like that.
And it's some Dark Souls shit.
I do not think that this is a kick some ass then. So I think it is
act under pressure.
Probably act under pressure. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
9 plus 2.
These are those finale rolls. You do the thing that you set out to do.
I pull Beacon out and whip it around its leg, and Beacon says, "Have a nice trip." Oh. And then I pull, and he falls over, and Beacon says, "Eat my whole ass."
And that would be like the pommel, right?
Yeah. This thing starts to... It jab its huge spear in an unaware Janelle's direction, but you, like, without even thinking, whip Beacon around his leg and knock it down, and it misses, and its spear clatters to the ground and kind of slides past Janelle, and it misses its assault, and it starts to stand up again, this time angrier than before, and it turns to see who attacked it, and now, Duck, you can see who it is. You see... horns on its head poking through a large plate helmet, and you see familiar eyes that have gone blackened and, you know, hollow, and he stands to his full height, just this massive imposing height, wearing this bulky plate armor, and glowers down at you, and it is Vincent, the Minister of Defense and
friendly goat man who you have encountered in
Sky. God, fucking damn it.
Can Thacker take a move?
Yes.
Yeah, Thacker, go ahead.
You sound confident, Cosmic, Dad, and I love it.
I am. Cosmic insight.
Okay.
You have, again, he has encompassed the soul of the universe.
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Psychic event. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Psychic event.
He has not encompassed anything.
To use his sensitive powers, opening his brain to the psychic environment. And in this case, well, I'll just roll.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Crap. Well, it's a 9.
Plus weird, right?
Plus weird, which is 2. That's an 11.
Okay. Why were you crapping?
Well, because I wanted to get 1 through 6, because 1 through 6, a bad roll, you make contact with something dangerous, and I was thinking maybe it would...
Oh, bud, trust. If you had gotten a 1 through 6, then making contact with something dangerous would have fucked you right up. That's not a good thing. That's a bad... That's the not ideal result of this scenario.
Okay, well, in this case, he gets a definite impression, a vision, a tangible aura, an overheard thought, something from Vincent.
Okay. Time stands still. The scene around you is like you're seeing it through this this bright red filter. And you look around and you can move a little bit, but everybody else is kind of in position. You see Duck with his sword drawn, and you see Janelle starting to like fall backwards away from Vincent. And you see Aubrey with her third eye open, but you can move a little bit. And right where Vincent is, you just see this like blinking red light that is in his form, and it is, you know, roughly humanoid, occupying the space of his body. But this light turned towards you and speaks to you in a familiar voice, and it says,
Are you coming to me?
Yes, I'm coming, and I'm bringing some friends.
What is it that you hope to accomplish?
Peace. I'm looking for peace.
The time for peace has long passed.
You should know that, Thacker.
Both of our worlds are blind.
It's time for us to begin anew.
Then I guess I'm coming for war then, I suppose, if that's the only option I got left.
So be it.
And that filter, that red filter, is just gone, and now you see time catch up to you, and your head, Thacker, is just... You fall to your knees. Your head is just splitting, and you hear this loud clanging noise, and when you look up, you see that Vincent has fallen to the ground. And this time he is just breathing. And you can actually tell that whatever influence he had on it, the Quell's influence, the same thing that took you over, it's gone now. It has retreated away from Vincent, who makes his way up to his knees and shakes his head off. And you probably feel a sympathy for him, knowing like how shitty he probably feels right now, this Quell hangover. But he recovers, and the first thing he does is look up at you. He locks eyes with you, Thacker, and he says,
"Hello, what was that?"
Well, my friend, that was the Quell, and it kind of gets in your head and makes you act all goofy. But I got to tell you, as far as I can tell, you didn't do anything wrong. Of course, I've only been here about 90 seconds.
Yeah, so. He as he stands up and picks up his spear, he looks around at some of the felled guards, and he just shakes his head and just looks completely, just has this vacant, distant look on his face. And
well, it wasn't you, though. It wasn't you. Listen, it came on me, and I was like crawling around on ceilings, and I was wiping people out, and... It ain't your fault. You didn't do it. Don't feel bad.
Here, partner. I hand him the Slim Jim that Leo gave me. Why don't you try snapping into this? It always helps me clear my head.
This whole time he has been like trying to process everything, and it is taking him so much longer than it normally would. And he looks down at this bright yellow, long, shitty looking package with a long, nasty looking beef stick inside of it. And he looks at you
this
curiously.
This week we're sponsored by Slim Jim.
He looks at this big, shitty, awful, idiot snack. And
you are really kissing this endorsement goodbye.
And for just like a second, you can tell that he's not thinking about what just happened. He's not thinking about, like, you have interrupted this downward spiral that he was going through, and reminding him of just sort of all of the little pleasures of Earth that you all have brought him, all of these just sort of mindless fun distractions. And he looks up at you and just seems to kind of shake it off, and he tears the package open and takes just like an enormous goat bite out of it, and he says, "Are you all here? Hold on."
Use as directed. That is exactly,
yep,
absolutely right. That's how we do it on Earth.
What is bracing?
Yeah, man. It's the fucking cumin. The cumin will get you every time, bud.
He looks around and like instantly puts together, okay, things have fallen apart. The gates are closed. You all are here. There has to be a reason for it. He hobbles over to the lock and jams his spear in it, which he twists, and the doors part open just narrow enough for all of you to slip inside.
As we head inside, Aubrey closes her eyes again, following Janelle, closes her eyes again. Alexandra, if you can hear us, we're on our way to help.
You don't hear any response, but you have that third eye open, right, to help him out?
Yes.
Exposing you to danger?
Yeah.
Right. Everybody else has gone inside. You're the last one to slip through the door. And as you do, just in your periphery, just for like a blip, like if you did not have your third eye open, like you obviously would have missed it. It's like a single frame spliced into a film. You see hovering in the air 20 feet away in the distance. You see five of those four-armed beings made out of light just kind of hovering in the air and just kind of observing, and then in a blink they're gone and the doors creak shut behind you. Hey there, everybody. Thanks for listening to The Adventure Zone. This is Griffin. I've already messed this up, but you know who I am and what I do. Thanks for listening. This is episode 34, and I hope you like it. And we're just a few episodes out from the end of Amnesty now, getting all sentimental. And thank you all so much for all your kind words, all your support throughout this whole season. It has meant the world to us. Real excited for what's coming up next, and we'll be able to talk more about that really soon. But before that happens, I'm going to tell you about a couple of our sponsors. Thank you to everybody who's been tweeting about the show using the Zonecast hashtag. Definitely no more new characters, I would say, because we're just a couple episodes out from the true finale, but it still means a lot for you spreading the word. As we move into the ending here of Amnesty, people have been really singing the show's praises to their friends and getting them listening, and that is how we've been able to grow and have the audience and all the great opportunities that we have today, and we are so grateful. Thank you also to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows there. If you like this show, I bet you're really going to like Mission to Zix. It's an improvised comedy, like sci-fi space opera that is just a hoot. Join the network, I think, just earlier this year. And yeah, that's the Max Fun rec for today. And yeah, we got new merch. If you go to macroy.family, you can find out all of our news and garbage and stuff. But we got new merch, including an Adventure Zone fanny pack that I can't believe we got to make, and I'm very, very excited. Yeah, I think that's probably gonna do it. I'm filled with gratitude today for everything, your support for the show, for the graphic novel, for all of it. It means the world. You all have changed our lives. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So, next episode, delayed 1 week. It's going to be up September 12th, and then the final episode, I think, is going to be up September 19th. It's definitely going to be up September 19th. I think it's going to be the final episode. Anyway, that's it. Get back to the episode, and I'll talk to you later.
The fluorescent overhead lighting of the St. Francis Medical Center Annex flicker as the monstrous entity gains entry. Slinking around cubicle corners and through emptied meeting rooms, this beast, an 8-foot-long, 6-legged, bright red Komodo dragon, stalks the living prey it senses in this building. A trash can topples over in an adjacent room and the lizard roars, exposing its crooked, razor-sharp teeth. It charges in the direction of the sound. It finds Muffy, wounded and bleeding, her back against the far wall of a meeting room, her eyes closed, pleading for help. The beast charges, smashing through the doorframe into the room, toppling tables and chairs in its furious assault. Its mouth opens wide as it makes contact with a wall. It slumps to the ground, dazed for a moment. It sees its own shadow on the wall and turns to find a projector shining down onto the screen it just ran. Muffy's voice comes from the shadows.
Honestly, dear, that's Bush League hunting.
She emerges into the light, string drawn on an ornate longbow. Two other figures wearing robes flank her with crossbows in hand. They fire a volley at the Komodo dragon as it charges in their direction, sticking bolts and arrows all around its face and body. The beast prepares to leap and finish its assault when something lands on its back, dropping it to the floor. A ceremonial dagger pierces its head. And then whatever was binding its form together loses its sway and the beast disintegrates into a gelatinous bright red puddle. Winthrop lifts himself up and out of the creature's remains, looks down, and recoils in horror.
My Louboutins!
The castle doors shut behind you, and you actually see a couple of guards that have their backs up against the door, like pushing it shut. One of them is this fearsome-looking bulldog creature wearing this studded armor. The other one you've actually seen before, it's a squirrel that you've seen a few times that used to guard the archway, but it's here now and has this bandage over his left eye. And it's fairly ramshackle here in the foyer of the castle. There is a small fire in the center of the room, and there are a handful of Sylvans sitting around it with just vacant expressions. Their energy is clearly flagging. You get the impression that they probably haven't siphoned anything off of the crystal for quite some time now. And there are a few folks all around the room who are in a similar state. There are a couple of specters too, who are like they're almost invisible. They are only barely opaque. And one of them actually makes his way over to you, and you can't really make out who it is because his form is so blurred. But his voice says, "Pine God, have you come to deliver us in our hour of need? You're a little late." And now you recognize this person as Woodbridge, who is the Minister of Preservation here, whose form is just not really visible, and you can't see that sort of smarmy, shitty face that was so mean to you the first time that you made your way here.
Hey, what happened to you?
Look around you. It was Goose, right? Or was it...
Duck. Yeah, it's a nickname.
Quail. The same thing that's happening to everybody else, Duck. We're dying. We are all dying or dead, isn't that?
And then he looks and sees that Vincent is with you, and that Janelle is with you, and he stops and like shakes his head and says, You're back? You people can come back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm sorry about the holdup, by the way. Had a few other things to attend to, you know, Earthside. So I am sorry about that.
Woodbridge then turns over to Janelle and says, "And our wayward minister of the arcane has returned. I take it your mission was not a success." And Janelle kind of looks down at the ground. She looks like she feels really guilty.
Hey, my dude, I'm sorry that you're like fading away or whatever the fuck, but quit being a piece of shit. Like, we're here now and we're trying to help, and she was doing her best, so get off her nuts, all right?
Ah, yes, I understand. It was her idea, you know.
Oh my God, I'm going to melt you into a puddle in the ground. Like, everybody's clearly going through some shit. Do you really think this is the time?
I don't see that we have any. And Janelle just like holds her hand out and he goes like flying across the room and runs into a big crystal chandelier in the ceiling, yes, which he kind of bounces off of.
Thank you.
And Janelle says, I've wanted to do that for a long time.
Yes, he is a piece of shit.
And he sheepishly like sinks back down to the floor and makes a real shitty glare over at Janelle and wanders closer to the fire. And then you all hear footsteps rushing toward you from the royal chambers, and you see the interpreter, who Aubrey, you've seen a few times during your lessons now, and Duck, you haven't seen since you were first introduced to Sylvain, you know, almost a year ago now. She looks like you saw her the first time. She's a young girl, only now her cheeks are like fairly sunken, and she has tears in her eyes, and she just leaps at Janelle and just clutches her legs. And Janelle is similarly like kind of teary-eyed, and she says, I'm so sorry, dear. I'm so sorry. I won't leave you again. As you all are kind of witnessing this reunion, Vincent turns to you, Duck, and he says,
Have you been beefing up? You look, I know I haven't seen you in a while. You look great.
That's cool as hell, you. Thank you. Yeah, I've been training with some more chosen ones back Earthside. Been trying to work on my delts and my glutes and my pecs and everything. Thank you for noticing. A lot of people just let that pass by. I appreciate it.
I said it's a uniform. Good, Duck. Okay, I said it.
When we get through all this, we should do some sparring. What do you say? Just two bros working it out.
Yeah, I'm going to take a pass right now because you're all jacked up on Slim Jim energy. We call that meat meth, and I don't need to battle somebody in that condition. All that fucking sodium goes right to your muscles.
Aubrey's going to make her way over to Alexandra.
Okay.
She needs to have words.
Sure. You walk over to her, and she is still holding on to Janelle, and her face is just like buried in Janelle's robes, and you hear the interpreter's voice say, "Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you."
I hear her voice, or I hear her say it.
You hear her voice.
Okay, Aubrey tries to think, "You're welcome, Alexandra."
Nothing happens.
Damn it! Hey, Alexandra, can I talk to you for a minute?
She pulls her face away from Janelle's robes, and she says, "Aubrey, what is it?"
Yeah, Janelle, you can chat too. You're probably going to be So Janelle and Alexandra, I can hear Alexandra's thoughts, and I can't really. So I was trying to talk to the lady who lives in the magic, you know, and instead, I heard Alexandra, and Alexandra, you said something about maybe having deceived some people and maybe having messed
she
up a little
goes,
bit.
She goes white as a ghost, white as a sheet.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So we need to have some words, the three of us.
Janelle looks at her and looks at you and says, you heard her thoughts, Aubrey?
Yeah, I was trying to talk to the lady who lives in the magic.
She looks back at both of you just with a rare look of puzzlement on her face. Thacker, what are you doing while all these conversations are happening?
Well, I mean, the only thing in here are the denizens of Sylvain,
right?
Yeah. Maybe he's really investigating them and checking out to see if, I mean, how many, have you given us a count as to how many people are, I mean, how many creatures are in there with us?
Maybe, you know, a little over a dozen or so. Not like, you know, not the entire city. Actually, a very, very small number of people have made it in here into the castle.
So I think he's kind of walking through the crowd and kind of looking at them, kind of checking them out, you know, just in case there's, you know, a quizzling in the brush, as
okay.
they say.
I don't even think you need to investigate a mystery. I think this is your... whatever it is, the thing where you know this shit. I would not make you roll for this because you are the Earth's like preeminent Sylvain scholar, and you have seen Sylvans before, and you have read about Sylvans when they start to go hollow like this, when they start to lose their connection to Sylvain. So like you know what this looks like, and what you notice is that Woodbridge has started to like. Come back a little bit. Like Woodbridge is now a little bit more tangible, a little bit more visible of a specter than he was just, you know, right when you came in. And this group that was sitting around the fire, just kind of looking kind of vacant, they're actually like having a you know, inspiring conversation with each other, a hang in there talk with each other. You notice that like everyone in this room actually, it seems to be, you know, gearing up for battle, seems to be getting their gumption back. Looking around the room, Janelle obviously notices that too, and you see her, Aubrey, clasp her hands over her mouth, and she looks at Duck, and she looks at Thacker, and she looks at you, and she says, I know how to stop the Quell.
Okay.
We need to go right now. I will explain on the way. And she takes off running towards the royal chamber, towards an open door at the back of the room.
Aubrey grabs Alexandra's hand and says, we're not done talking. Come on. And pulls her along with her.
Okay.
I just follow along. Okay. I mean, yeah, fuck it. Yes.
And I think Thacker leaves a little bit more slowly and really giving the last scrutiny to the room left behind.
As you leave the room behind, this thing that you notice, it's even more prominent. Now, like, the people around the fire are, like, standing up and starting to, like, pump each other up. Woodbridge is just, like, you know, still a specter, but, like, his form has come back. And you see him actually, like, looking at his hands, realizing what has happened. Everybody seems to be, like, re-energized.
And it continues even as we're leaving.
As you leave, you notice that everybody is just sort of, like, everybody's just kind of better. And... you follow along behind. The ward around the Cryptonomica is broken by the swarm of Quell terrors. One of Janelle's retinue faints from exhaustion. Kirby leaps to catch her. Indrid removes his glasses and begins clicking his mandibles and stretching his long, chitin-covered arms and legs. Moira closes her eyes, and the more ballistically deadly objects in the room begin floating in an orbit around her. A window smashes upstairs. Danny turns, slipping off a ring as she sprints to the second floor. She kicks open the door to Billy's old room, fully transformed, and sees a bright red winged gargoyle finding its footing after smashing in from outside. She bares her fangs, rears back her claws, and leaps toward it. The front door into the building topples over. Moira hurls a salvo of staplers, stones, and books in the direction of the horde. With a flap of his wings, Indrid is on one of them, repeatedly smashing it into the wall and ceiling. Kirby stands his ground against a charging red bear, but is thrown like a ragdoll across the room and over Ned's old desk. He climbs to his feet as the bear prepares another assault, and then... Kirby hears a chorus of battle cries from outside. There are dozens of folks, young and old, all charging the horde. They emerge into the moonlight, and Kirby notices their uniforms. No, not uniforms, their merch. Shirts, hats, jackets, pins, stickers, all read, Saturday Night Dead. Kirby grins.
He leans down, retrieves a brass-tipped walking stick from below the desk, and pounces. Upstairs, Danny lands the killing blow on her enemy, but her fury has given her tunnel vision. A blood-red cobra slithers into the room, cautiously approaching the unaware Sylvan. The cobra strikes and is intercepted, snatched out of the air by a small, furry, white paw. The snake's head is twisted violently. It spasms, and two short, furry, white arms slam its body into the ground with a decisive thunk. Danny hears the impact and turns. Dr. Harris Bonkers stands before her on two hind legs, 3 feet tall, the dying snake held in one of his anthropomorphized paws. His face is a mask of amazement, like Danny's, who says, "Huh." And you all go into this antechamber beyond the royal chambers, and once all of you are standing on the symbol with Alexandra and Vincent and Janelle, she places her hand on the ground and it lights up, and this elevator starts to descend, and it drops below the castle, and it is suspended on these 4 thin rails, and you have an almost uninterrupted view of the chasm below the city. Aubrey, you've seen it before, but the scope of it, Thacker and Duck, is just breathtaking. It is just this enormous earthen void it's got a viewing platform that the bottom of the elevator docks into that seems to stretch partway around this chamber's circumference. And at the center of all of it is the crystal, the rest of it, what's attached to the comparatively humble peak right in front of the castle. This is the iceberg below the water. And like what you saw above ground, the light is almost like completely extinguished. Right now, actually, the only light is coming from below. There is searing red light that is flashing from the endless void down below the viewing platform. And it is dramatically illuminating everyone and everything every several seconds, joined by a deep, labored breath. But Janelle doesn't seem to care about any of that. She is staring at you, Aubrey, and her mouth is hanging slightly ajar.
What? Hey, what's up? Do I got a booger?
She grins for like a second and then goes back to that slightly vacant expression. And she looks at all of you and she says, "Did you notice? Woodbridge and the others?
They're getting stronger."
She takes a beat and she looks back at you, Aubrey, and she says, "Do you know?"
"Do I know what?"
She grins again and takes a step back and she says, "You can hear the interpreter's heartfelt, pure, unspoken pleas. You can nourish our people and sustain their vital energies just by being near them."
"Uh-huh."
"You have powers beyond anything I've ever seen, Aubrey. You can break the Quell's corruption. You've restored life to the dead. Aubrey, you're not from Sylvain."
"You are Sylvain."
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
I'm
Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McAvoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek? Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope. Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.